From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The annual G7 summit took place in Quebec, Canada this year, and things went about as badly as expected. Ahead of the summit, U.S. President Donald Trump announced a trade war with Europe and his NAFTA allies that confounded even his own staff and party. Facing angry words from the ordinarily mild-mannered Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and French President Emmanuel Macron, reports began leaking from the White House about a petulant Trump wondering why he had to attend. But he did attend, and while there, wondered out loud why Russia was not a member of the grouping, and disrupted a gender empowerment meeting with his late arrival. A photo of European leaders, including German Chancellor Angela Merkel, facing a stubborn-looking Trump with his advisor John Bolton behind him went viral. Merkel remarked that Trump's messaging around the G7 was, quote, sobering and, quote, depressing. Meanwhile, also in Canada, provincial elections in Ontario resulted in an unexpected win recently for the party of a Trump-like right-wing populist named Doug Ford. My guest is Derek O'Keefe, founding editor of Ricochet Media. He's a writer and activist based in Vancouver, British Columbia, and he just announced his candidacy for the Vancouver City Council. Welcome to the program, Derek.
Thanks so much for having me on the show again, Sonali.
Let's focus first on the G7 summit. We had covered it on our program last week ahead of the meeting. And as I said, things went about as expected, as badly as expected. That viral photo is so telling. And of course, progressives like yourself have long been critics of the G7. However, of course, where Donald Trump is coming from may not be the most constructive way to sort of destroy this particular grouping. But remind our audience what the G7 is and why it is problematic.
Sure. Well, that's an important place to start. We wouldn't want the horror of Donald Trump to rehabilitate these international alliances of what are really the old imperial powers. The so-called Western consensus, of course, was built on a century plus of colonial plunder and oppression of the global South. So the critique, and if you remember, there was another big international gathering in Quebec, I guess 17 years ago, which was a different alliance, but it was to negotiate a free trade area of the Americas. That was vigorously protested. And in that era, the anti-globalization movement or global justice movement, as it was known at the time, targeted all of these international summits of the organizations of the so-called Western Alliance and the dominant powers of the global North with massive protests. So the WTO protests in 1999, in 1997, there was an APEC, Asia Pacific Economic Summit here in Vancouver, Canada, that saw a massive protest. And it was interesting, before we get into Trump's odd and erratic behavior at the G7 there, it was interesting that outside the summit, now they had moved it 100 kilometers east of Quebec City to a small resort town that was easier to lock down, but there were very small numbers of protests, and the movements have declined over the years that focus on these events, but it was really noteworthy that the protests were small, and as we've sort of seen a generational shift, so it is important to remind people getting politically active in this generation and aware of the problems in the world that these organizations and what they represent they do not represent universal progress, and there are a lot of important critiques to make of these alliances and how they sit down to still carve up the world, even if they're less dominant with the rise of China and other new powers today.
And it's so interesting because the European leaders, and of course before Trump, President Barack Obama, were casting the G7 as the pinnacle of liberal achievement. But they faced a lot of critique from the left. With Trump, they faced critique from the right. The trade war, which we've already discussed on our program in great detail, is also something that doesn't really seem to make sense, regardless of one's critique of how free trade does dismantle labor rights. Of course, in Europe, you do have stronger worker rights that these tariffs would undermine. Now, coming into the G7 meeting with Trump basically saying that Russia should be a member of the G7 and Emmanuel Macron saying This can be a G6 meeting, right? In his tweets ahead of the summit, he implied that the rest of the European allies and Canada could move forward without the United States, that the economies of the countries minus the U.S. was, you know, essentially able to rival the U.S. economy. What does that mean going forward for relationships, diplomatic relationships between Canada, Europe, and the U.S.?
Yeah, well, we shouldn't minimize these trade wars, or I guess incipient trade wars, that are mostly tweets and still pretty limited tariffs compared to past trade wars, because historically trade wars between the big powers have led to world wars and big conflagrations.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's very, very serious in a nuclear armed world, especially. But, you know, Macron, who now a lot of people have made analogies between Trudeau and Macron, mostly because of their age and their image and their positioning as sort of centrist progressives, although we can critique the definition of progressive and centrist for both of them, given what they're actually implementing in their agenda. But Macron has really been able to build his image by taking a more aggressive stance at times with respect to Trump. For Trudeau, because, you know, majority of Canada's trade is with the United States, and because we are the weaker northern neighbor militarily, obviously, Trudeau has taken a much more conciliatory, to say the least, approach to Trump until this weekend really marked a turning point, where Trudeau finally, at the closing press conference at the G7, said Canada is not going to be pushed around by the United States. Because up until now, their approach on most issues has been a very quiet, quiet diplomacy, and basically allowing Trump to bluster. And Justin Trudeau, to give you an example, he even appointed Brian Mulroney, a former conservative prime minister of Canada and good friend of the Trump family, to be sort of his unofficial emissary to Trump. And there was a few months into the Trump presidency, Mulroney was actually singing at a dinner at the so-called Southern White House in Florida, Trump's tacky resort there. So Trudeau has tried to take a conciliatory approach. That's no longer possible politically. But Macron can afford to bluster more and really position himself as the global anti-Trump, because, of course, France's major economic connections are in Europe.
It's interesting because Macron had a very affable seeming personal relationship with Trump, and where Trump is concerned, those personal relationships seem to outweigh national policy. So we've seen, you know, Trump form friendships and admirations for people like the Chinese head of state Xi Jinping. Macron was sort of one of those people, and of course he has a long-standing admiration for Vladimir Putin. What do you make of his assertion that Russia should be part of the G7? He doesn't seem to understand that any moves that he makes towards a pro-Russia stand only feed all of the various conspiracies and hysteria, anti-Russia hysteria, and Russia's and allegations about Russian interference in U.S. elections.
Yeah, well, the whole Russia angle with Trump, I think, has been there's obviously a fire where that smoke is. And it's rather astonishing his inability to ever say a critical word about Putin. One, you know, just seems to lend credence to the idea that there's a tape or other sort of blackmail lying around. But it may also just be his obtuseness and stubbornness that is inbuilt in his character. But I think the whole Russia focus has maybe obscured all the other reasons to be oppose Trump's agenda and his other foreign connections with Saudi Arabia, with the Israeli billionaires. You know, you can go down the list, and of course his son-in-law's many international connections. So I do think the Russia angle is overplayed, and Putin and Russia have been at previous G8 summits, and the breaking point where there was Crimea and the conflict in Ukraine. So I'm not particularly sympathetic to the coverage focusing on that so much. I think the stuff around the trade war is more serious. And then also, what really got Trump acting petulant, it sounds like, aside from his rude showing up late for the women's empowerment breakfast, what really got him upset, according to inside reports, there's a long article in the Toronto Star today that indicates he was sort of willing to go around with go along with a consensus statement from the seven leaders there. But then he became petulant because there was going to be reference to the Paris Climate Agreement and also to a shared goal of reducing plastic pollution in the oceans. So what kind of a personality, what kind of a political stance is it if you're opposed to efforts to reduce plastic pollution in the oceans, which, as we all know, is just at a horrific scale?
Let's move to what has happened in Ontario, the East Coast province in Canada, the home of Toronto. This is in a way related to not Trump, but Trumpianism, maybe we call it. Tell us who Doug Ford is and his, to us at least here in the U.S., bizarrely named Progressive Conservative Party, and how it is that he just swept provincial elections there. His party just swept elections there.
Yeah, all our party names are pretty confusing to Americans because there's still the Progressive Conservatives at the provincial level, and then there's the Liberal Party. And of course, saying you're a liberal in the United States has a more leftist connotation than being a liberal in Canada, where there are large social democratic parties at all levels. So Doug Ford, in a way, the Ford family, in some respects, came before the Trump phenomenon in the United States, because of course Doug Ford is the brother of Rob Ford, who was the former mayor of Toronto, who passed away, I guess a year or two ago now, and had a colorful, controversial, ridiculous, surreal tenure as the mayor of Toronto, but did pitch himself as this populist everyman, you know, just this out of shape kids football coach who would come and fix the pothole on your street, and who was willing to stand up to the unions and the special interest groups and everything else you were supposed to hate. So Rob Ford, it wasn't quite the Rob Ford, and also Rob Ford did have a base of support, believe it or not, amongst some Black communities around Toronto and communities of color. Particularly outside the urban core, which was perceived as a more liberal professional class. So amongst the working classes around Toronto and in the suburbs. And because Toronto is a megacity, he was able to win general elections. So it's not quite analogous to Trump in terms of there wasn't the same vitriolic anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim racism as an anti-Mexican strong undercurrent to Trumpism. And Jeet here is a writer who, editor with New Republic. He's written more on this and could more articulately look at sort of the Trump-Ford analogy. But it is, I don't want to downplay it, it is a very scary thing that Doug Ford has now become Premier of Ontario. Doug Ford is a longtime Conservative politician in Ontario. The previous Progressive Conservative leader in Ontario got caught up in a sex scandal, basically, and had to step down. A number of allegations of inappropriate and harassing behavior with staffers and others much younger than him. So he stepped down as leader. Doug Ford came in as the leader just a couple of months before a general election was due. And the Liberal Premier, Kathleen Wynne, had become very unpopular. She had privatized a large chunk of the electric system, the hydro system in Ontario, had a number of other scandals in sort of the Liberal Party. But it was one of those situations where the center just collapsed. You could make it analogous, I guess, to Hillary Clinton versus Trump. The centrist candidate had a lot of things against her and it became quite unpopular. But in this case, I mean, her vote just collapsed. The NDP finished a strong second and is now the official opposition in Ontario. But Doug Ford swept to a majority government with about 40% of the vote because we have a first past the post system. So another thing, it's not like Trump in that Trump actually lost the general election if you go by absolute totals and not by the Electoral College. So all of that said, what's very scary about Doug Ford, it's not simple to say that he's a Trump for Ontario or a Trump for Canada. We can't easily make that comparison. But what's very disturbing is that outright racist, white supremacists who have emerged in recent years along with the rise of Trump and the alt-right and sort of the renewed public presence of neo-fascists, really, or neo-Nazis all across North America and Europe as well, In Canada, we haven't seen much of this as a public phenomenon, but they have begun organizing underground in a much more serious way, and they intervened quite seriously in the Ontario election. We recently did an investigative report at Ricochet Media, where we looked at hours and hours and hours of this podcast, a white supremacist podcast called This Hour Has 88 Minutes, a play on the name of a news satire program in Canada. And we listened to this filth, hours of it, to find the very explicit excerpts where these white supremacist podcast hosts were encouraging their listeners to intervene, to even become candidates at the provincial or local level, but encouraging them to put Doug Ford into power. And they suggested that Ford, once in power, would have an effect like Trump of sort of giving permission to overt racists and white supremacists to come out and, you know, say what everyone is thinking in the parlance of these racists. So to give you an example, one of the excerpts from a podcast episode said that Ford will electrify the working class. And then he says, you know, people want to make racist remarks. They just don't have the permission to say it. Ford winning the provincial election will give them that permission. So the next time some Black Lives Matter protester jumps up and stops a parade, these people are going to be like, get off the stage. They need permission. And on it goes like that. And, you know, extreme misogyny in these podcasts. And we should say, like, sexism, misogyny played a real role in the attacks on Kathleen Wynne. Again, like Trudeau, she's a liberal politician that I would have a lot of critiques of, but there's no doubt there was a strong factor.
What do you make of the
misogynist factor?
Right.
Also, she's a lesbian politician as well. It's worth noting.
What do you make of the fact that Doug Ford, after his election, said that he would be standing shoulder to shoulder with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau against sort of Trump's post-G7 summit attacks? Does that mean he's going to take a more conciliatory tone in his leadership once elected, or is that just rhetoric?
Yeah, you know, it's Monday morning here. I hadn't even seen that comment yet. That's very interesting, and his advisors have obviously got to him early this morning. Both the Ford brothers, like Trump, will say contradictory things with great conviction within days.
Wow.
So they'll contradict themselves. And actually, Robin Doug Ford used to have a radio program that they did where, again, they, depending on the week or the side of the bed they rolled off of, could say different things. So during the election campaign, Doug Ford was asked about Trump and repeatedly said he's behind Trump all the way. He wasn't going to withdraw his support from Trump. So to have him kind of defending the Canadian Prime Minister today suggests that, you know, he's brought in some high-level advisors or handlers, and they've given him that advice. But who knows what tomorrow will bring.
Derek, the similarities, you said, of course, there are differences, but two similarities that really stood out to me, aside from the fact that these people like Ford and Trump get elected because of the failure of liberal elites, is that they use populist language and rhetoric, like, you know, good jobs and that they were going to save ordinary people. And they have a foothold in popular media. You know, Trump, a reality show star, this guy, Doug Ford, having had a radio show, and of course, having this Nazi podcast supporting him, to have this foothold in media, whether it's media of your own creation or media that holds you up, is a big issue. How important is it for us to identify this, particularly as people on the left struggle in this ideological battle that the right seems to be winning?
Yeah, and I would add a third thing related to the reality TV and media presence is the seeming immunity to scandal, or even that,
or thriving on scandal, right?
The more scandals accumulate, the more their popular approval ratings go up, and those two things are related. So with Rob Ford, I mean, Rob Ford in office was, in many ways, more ridiculous than Trump in office. Let's not say anything is more.
This was the former mayor of Toronto, Doug Ford's brother.
Rob Ford. I mean, so for many months there was or even over a year, there was this search for the tape of Rob Ford smoking crack cocaine. And it was related to gang activity and potential blackmail over this tape, whether it existed or not. And there are photos of of Rob Ford with known known drug traffickers, dealers, you know, reports of public drunkenness. When he came to Vancouver, the first night he got here, he got a ticket for being drunk and jaywalking. So it was just, it became a reality TV show, the Rob Ford mayoralty, and Doug Ford and Rob just sort of are a pair, although Doug, you know, doesn't have any addiction problems or substance abuse problems that we know of, and is a little more conventional looking politician. So there's those elements, and then the populist factor. And the Fords, like the Trumps, come from inherited wealth. The Ford's father had a very successful business that they inherited. So they're not the self-made businessman, and yet they appeal to the working classes with very, very populist slogans. So Doug Ford's campaign slogan was "For the People." And if you can believe it, his big sort of signature promise in the last weeks of the campaign was to have a buck a beer, to make sure that we could get back to the times when you could buy a beer for $1 at the liquor store.
That's a marker of success and progress, to buy a beer for $1?
Yeah, it's just sort of embarrassing as a Canadian. It's just so cliche of a Canadian thing to have that be a major factor in an election. But you saw that and you're like, well, this is just so ridiculous. People are just going to laugh at the Fords, but, that may have helped, you know, it just plays into their brand and builds the sort of, everyman image. It obviously didn't hurt them. And then 2 or 3 days before the election, or in the last week anyway, Rob Ford's widow, announced that she is suing Doug Ford, over the estate, of his brother. So alleging that there was impropriety with dividing up the estate. So he was literally accused of being a grave robber, potentially, by his sister-in-law in the last days of the election. Didn't hurt him one bit.
So Derek, you are running for the Vancouver City Council. As far as I know, is this the first time that you're throwing your hat into the ring for an elected position? You're a longtime activist and a writer. This is a new chapter for you, it seems.
Yeah, it was a decision made in the last week or two at most, so still adjusting. But I definitely I have a lot of writing and editing projects still in the works. But I've decided the situation in Vancouver is really urgent. We're one of the most expensive cities in the world and one of the top two or three in North America. But our incomes are totally out of whack. The average income is totally out of whack with the average price of housing, the average rents. So just to give you an example, our oldest son is 7. I've had to move with my partner 5 times since he was born. And it's just to the point where, you know, especially as an independent writer and editor, it's hard to survive in a city like this. And last year, there was a really inspiring campaign led by a woman named Jean Swanson in a by-election municipally. She finished 2nd to the right wing, and she's running again this year, along with a slate of left-wing candidates. And I got convinced to jump in and be part of it this year. I was definitely going to work on her campaign anyway. And it's kind of a make or break moment for Vancouver, turning away from the crisis that relying on market development and market housing has created here. So that's my explanation for it. I'm still getting used to wearing the politician hat, but you know, there have been internationally some really inspiring municipal politicians stepping up and being able to advocate a really openly, even socialist politics. Just down the I-5 here, down the West Coast in Seattle, there's Shama Sawant, who has, as just one elected member of City Council, has been able to push through a lot of really important measures. She was part of the Fight for 15 that really took off in Seattle, and recently won a battle against Amazon, or won a partial victory to impose a new tax on Amazon that will help fund housing for the homeless in Seattle.
Right. So we actually had her on our program to talk about that very struggle that Seattle is dealing with. It sounds like it's a similar struggle in Vancouver, and all it could take is one progressive member of your city council to push that city in the right direction.
Yeah, we're hoping to get at least 2 or 3 of us on the council of 10. And together with Shama, we'll have a bit of a Northwest socialist coalition coming together. All the problems Vancouver has are mirrored in Seattle, I would say. Just cities of enormous wealth, but also enormous precarity and homelessness.
And inequality, yeah. And so it seems as though this sort of local type democratic activism that connects grassroots movements with local office can be one antidote to the rise of these right-wing movements we're seeing at the more macro level, such as Doug Ford and Trump, and even in some European nations.
Yeah, absolutely. And the white supremacist groups and the sort of far right groups, they've started to target the municipal level as well. It just so happens there's a regular protest by white nationalists, they would call themselves, group here in Vancouver. And they specifically have it at City Hall every month. And that's a very disturbing thing to me. I live a 5-minute walk away. I see them all the time when I'm walking with my kids. And so even in a city with such a progressive image as Vancouver, we have now open organizing by really white supremacist forces. And that's a big, big concern, especially when, as the supporters of Trump and Doug Ford say, or some of them say, they now have permission, quote unquote. So we're seeing the ugliness up here on the north side of the border as well. And it's important that we fight it together. However we can win elected office, it's important at every level, but sometimes the municipal level, you can break in a little more easily with a openly radical program. At least that's what we've seen in Seattle, Jackson, Mississippi, Barcelona. So that's what's inspiring me to take this bit of a leap, be on the other side of the other side of the camera, I guess, or something, because I'm used to being a journalist and writer and
right.
helping these politicians with their op-eds, but this is a new stage for sure.
Well, good luck to you, Derek. I know you have kids as well, so that work-life balance is important. And so good luck with all of that. It's important for people to make those, to put your money where your mouth is, to basically put your politics into action. Thank you so much, Derek, and good luck.
Yeah, we're putting our lack of money where our mouth is. Like you said, I'll be taking leaflets to the playground this summer just in case I could do some campaigning while being a responsible parent. Thank you for your kind words on that.
Give out the website for Ricochet where people can read your writings as well.
Absolutely, it's ricochet.media, and I'll be helping out as a founding editor on the back end for a little while at least. I obviously won't be writing about municipal politics, but ricochet.media. A lot of Canadian news from across the country. And also, it was founded in Montreal, Quebec, so there's a French side to the website. So any readers of French interested in the movements, social movements of Quebec, it's a great resource for you there.
We'll post a link to that from our website. Derek, thank you so much and good luck.
Okay, always a pleasure to come on. Thank you, Sonali.
Derek O'Keefe is founding editor of Ricochet Media, a writer and activist based in Vancouver, BC. He's just announced his candidacy for the Vancouver City Council. We've been discussing the G7 meeting in Quebec, as well as election results in Ontario province. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.